Previously on Conspiracy in Canton.
Officer John O'Keefe was found dead in Canton in January of 2022.
State prosecutors accused Karen Reed, who was O'Keefe's girlfriend, of backing into him and leaving him to die in the snow.
Outside a home currently occupied by people known to O'Keefe.
I think it's a terrible accident.
The defense claims evidence points to other witnesses in the case.
The lead detective is very close with the owners of that property.
The body of a fellow Boston police officer is dead in your yard, and nobody from inside the house even comes outside.
They say there were a lot of people at the home that night, and one of them Googled how long to die in the cold hours before Reed would have known O'Keefe was missing.
Lawyers for the woman under arrest not only say their client is innocent, but they're alleging a cover-up.
Pieces of her taillight weren't found until after her car was taken into custody.
A lot of people are talking about this. This is a small town where everyone knows everyone.
We've lived in town for 50 years, and the police have always done a great job.
All the reports do is bring up more questions.
Her lawyers argue the police report was altered.
So many of the reports and so many of the statements don't add up, and they tell different stories. And the documentation changes as it goes.
I don't think there's any kind of conspiracy or anything like that.
Jen McCabe never mentioned anything to anyone about hearing Karen say that she potentially hit John. It's not until after law enforcement leaves and she calls them and tells them to come back. And that's after she's had time to talk to the family.
My client has no criminal intent. She loved this man.
With every new detail comes a new controversy. And nothing is what it seems on the surface.
What matters to me is that they are lying. They are lying on court documents. They are lying to the public. And that is the part that should scare the shit out of everybody in Massachusetts. That's preventing justice.
Free Karen Reed! Free Karen Reed! Free Karen Reed! Free Karen Reed! Free Karen Reed!
I said it last time, and I'll have to say it again. If you missed the first two episodes of Conspiracy in Canton, I recommend stopping here and going back to listen to those first. This is a complicated case, and there are a lot of people involved, and a lot of information, and a lot of discrepancies in information. In the first episode, I gave an introduction into the death of Boston officer John O'Keefe, and into the charges against his girlfriend, Karen Reed. I brought up some of the questions that I had about this case. There are so many controversies surrounding it, and every time I dig into the information trying to find answers, I only seem to find more questions instead. In the last episode, I mentioned that normally I can get those questions answered by pouring myself into evidence and court documents and independent research. As we went through the timeline of events of that night, however, the inconsistencies made it increasingly more difficult to understand the truth. I named this series Conspiracy in Canton because of the bitter debates from both sides about the conspiracy as they see it. There are those who side with the Commonwealth and claim that the spreading of misinformation is all a conspiracy to win the case in the court of public opinion before it ever goes to trial. Then there are those who side with the defense, who claim that the conspiracy is the framing of Karen Reed for John's death in order to protect one or more of the members of the Albert family because of something that happened in the house that night after Karen left. When researching for the podcast, I heard a few different versions of the conspiracies, some more extreme than others. Human instinct is a funny thing. If we are presented information as fact, but then see inconsistencies, or things that don't make sense logically, or lies, it can create a cloud of confusion and doubt, causing us to be suspicious about not just those holes in the story, but the entire story. When we step back and reevaluate everything, we eventually see a new version of events arise as we piece together what we know and what we only thought we knew. It's like taking apart a puzzle that wasn't working and reconfiguring it piece by piece, seeing how and why each piece didn't work before, but it does now. In just about every version of the conspiracy that I heard while researching, it all started in this moment.
Wanted to update you on this incredible storm.
On the cusp of it, the eve of our blizzard making its way on in, and the first blizzard warnings we've seen around here in a long time.
This is going to be a very big storm. Probably one of the biggest we've experienced in the last few years.
Where to expect that snow, how it's going to be shaping up for tomorrow.
On January 28, 2022, around 5 p.m., Governor Baker held a press conference to address the incoming storm and prepare the state for what was ahead.
The entire state is expected to get snow and very significant snowfall across Greater Boston and into Central Mass.
News outlets across the state prepared viewers for what was coming.
Now we'll head for midnight and you can see what happens. The snow is now moving into Boston. Still kind of light stuff. It's sort of filling in right now at this point. Not really going quite yet. So if you have any plans going on between now and, say, midnight, I think you're in pretty good shape.
As the state prepared for what was going to be one of the largest blizzards in Boston history, snow had just begun to fall around midnight, and a light layer can be seen on surveillance video when John, Karen, the Alberts, and McCabes were seen leaving Waterfall Bar and Grill in Canton. According to news reports from ABC Channel 5 in Boston, Saturday morning, the storm was just getting underway, and there was a total of 2.3 inches of snowfall reported in Blue Hill Milton at 5:50 a.m. This is exactly 4 miles north of 34 Fairview Road, where John's body would be discovered 10 minutes later. The storm is one of the most critical pieces of evidence in this whole case. The sun rose in Canton at 7:01 a.m. on January 29, 2022. 20 miles north, Boston Mayor Michelle Wu gives a statement to news station WBZ-TV from her office, letting residents know that she has over 900 plows and salt spreaders on the roads in preparation of the onslaught of snow expected over the next 12 hours. Her interview is accompanied by live footage from reporters all over the Boston and surrounding areas, including footage only minutes from Canton. Weather conditions are getting more severe as wind increases and snow continues to fall. This interview and footage is from 8:12 a.m. The original Canton Police Department incident report is dated January 29th at 8:24 a.m., just 10 minutes after the live video footage showing the current weather conditions. Here's what's so important about this first search, the first police report, and the storm. The news stations are reporting 2 to 2.5 inches of snowfall east of the Canton area. In Facebook posts commenting on a news article from that morning, multiple residents in the area post personal photographs of the snow in their yards and around their homes, all of which are around 1 to 2.5 inches. Something of note here is that between every news report and the live footage, the Weather Channel, Facebook posts and comments, and the single crime scene photograph, there's no reports of the snow being any deeper than 2.5 inches at this time. But police reports say that Jen McCabe claimed John had about 6 inches of snow on him during her interviews. But that's only a small part of what stands out. The Canton Police Department was able to use a blower to remove the majority of the snow around where John's body was found. Since the storm was just beginning, they were able to do a thorough enough search that they found a broken cocktail glass and 6 droplets of blood. Keep in mind, at this point, sunrise has brought on some light, but they're still in the beginning stages of a storm. Snow is falling and wind is picking up, yet Canton police are still able to locate clear pieces of a cocktail glass and turn it in as evidence. In fact, they even informed the medical personnel at Good Samaritan Hospital that the broken glass was the suspected murder weapon. The other thing to note here is that they were able to locate 6 droplets of blood, which they gathered in solo cups to preserve for testing. So a clear cocktail glass, 6 tiny droplets of red blood, but not a single bright red large piece of taillight, or John's other shoe. There's only one photo of the crime scene attached to the police report. Only one. And noticeably, it shows no pieces of red taillight. The search is completed and the time is marked 8:24 a.m. Law enforcement has left 34 Fairview Road. They never searched inside the home or inside the fenced backyard. And when they left, they didn't preserve the scene with crime scene tape or surveillance. After about 30 minutes in the house with homeowners Brian and Nicole Albert, plus Nicole's sister Jen McCabe and her husband Matt, Jen calls Sergeant Lank back, asking him to return and talk to her. Sergeant Lank says in his report that he and Lieutenant Gallagher immediately left and arrived back at the house on Fairview Road within moments. Jen McCabe tells him that she, quote, recalled something that she was not sure if he was aware of, end quote. It's at this time when Jen mentions, for the very first time, the story about Karen asking if she could have possibly hit John. Massachusetts State Police soon takes over the jurisdiction of the case. The lead investigator, Trooper Proctor, has close family ties to the Alberts and McCabes. I'll be covering this in much more detail later. So, where was Proctor during this day? Well, according to Sergeant Lank's supplemental report, state police were contacted at 6:38 a.m., and Proctor called back within a few minutes and was made aware of the situation. That's at 6:38 a.m., but then, in his grand jury testimony, Lang says that the state police didn't actually take over jurisdiction until John passed in the hospital at 7:59 a.m., an hour and 20 minutes after Proctor was called. It's another 3.5 hours later, around 11:30 a.m., when Proctor goes to interview Jen and Matt McCabe. During this interview at the McCabe's house, the homeowners at Fairview, Brian and Nicole Albert, arrive and also do their interview at the McCabe's house. Now, this is strange because all four of them were already together at the Fairview Road home. So is there a reason that they went to the McCabe's house for the second interview instead of staying in the home where the body had just been found in the yard? Also during this day, Trooper Proctor and Buchanick went to Good Samaritan Hospital to view John. They observed six bloodied lacerations varying in length on the right arm extending from the forearm to the bicep. Both eyes were swollen shut and black and blue. There was a cut to the right eyelid area, and the clothing consisted of jeans, an orange t-shirt, a long sleeve shirt, and boxers. According to the PCA, they were, quote, saturated and contained blood and vomit, end quote. Remember that statement of case where things keep changing? Well, the wording on this changed as well. Now, it says that they were, quote, soaking wet and saturated with blood and vomit, end quote. It's a small change in wording, but a huge difference in the meaning. I told y'all this case gets really complicated. The injuries that John sustained and the possibilities for how he got them, that's something that we are going to get much more in-depth in later on, and I'll have an entire episode dedicated to the injuries sustained and the possibilities of how they got there. For now, I want to keep moving through the timeline of this day, specifically where Proctor was and when they found the taillights. According to Proctor's original affidavit, he says that he arrived at Karen's parents' house in Dighton at 4:30 p.m., The PCA says that they arrived and saw the large black SUV registered to Karen parked outside the driveway and observed the rear right passenger taillight to be, quote, shattered, end quote. But that's not all. They also said that large red plastic pieces were missing from the taillight. So how did we go from the taillight being cracked to now it's shattered and missing pieces? The PCA goes on to say that at 5:30, Buchanick and Proctor seized the black SUV from the driveway at 345 Country Hill Drive, which is Karen's parents' house. They used Dighton Police, who contacted Diamond Towing, transporting it to Canton Police Department, where it was secured in their Sally Port garage. They said that they traveled behind the tow truck from the residence to Canton Police Department. Meanwhile, CERT team shows up at Fairview Road to do another search of the yard where John's body was found. Unfortunately, CERT had some extra elements working against them during their search. For example, they showed up at 5:45 p.m., but the sun set in Canton, Massachusetts that night at 4:55 p.m. But light wasn't the only element working against the CERT team. Boston Weather Updates posted on their Facebook page from that evening that snowfall in Randolph had reached 22.1 inches. Randolph is about 7 miles east of 34 Fairview. CBS News Boston has reports on their Facebook page that line up with about that same time that show a mega band of snow that was dropping more than 2 inches an hour moving west to the Boston area. Governor Charlie Baker says in a conference that evening that the state experienced whiteout conditions for most of the day, and they weren't expecting it to dissipate until the next morning, though cleaning efforts will remain. Plow and salt trucks had been running all day, and in order to clear the road, the plows pushed the snow to the right, often causing extra snow on the banks, like near the area where John's body was found. So, with extra snow from the plows, the blizzard conditions adding on another 2 feet of snowfall, and the loss of daylight, there weren't high hopes for the CERT team to be able to locate anything that Canton PD didn't locate during their search under much less strenuous conditions. However, even with all of those elements working against them, the CERT team found a Nike sneaker, 2 red plastic pieces of taillight, and 1 piece of clear plastic taillight consistent with the taillight from Karen's car. This is hard to understand. It kind of defies logic. If the Canton Police Department was able to find 6 small droplets of frozen blood, how would they miss pieces of taillight? And there's so much more snow that has fallen since they were there earlier, and they were able to use the blower to even melt the snow to find more things. How is it possible that now all of a sudden there's a shoe and pieces of a taillight? This raised some questions, and this is one of the reasons that people thought, hey, maybe pieces were planted. But that's not possible, right? Because the car was towed from Karen's parents' house at 5:30 p.m. And CERT team didn't arrive to 34 Fairview until 5:30 p.m. also. So it's not possible, right? But once again, the times on the court documents are wrong. According to the footage from the cameras at Karen's parents' house and the Dighton police report, the car was not towed at 5:30. It was actually towed at 4:12 p.m. That's an hour and 18 minutes difference from what's written in the reports. The difference in that timeline means that not only Proctor, but Karen's car were both unaccounted for an hour and 18 minutes. So Trooper Proctor and people from the Canton Police Department, where the car was towed, had access not only to her car and the taillight, but to the crime scene as well, for more than an hour before the CERT team arrived. Now, that wouldn't be such a big deal, but keep in mind, now in these crazy weather conditions with no light and all this extra snow, now they miraculously find pieces of the taillight that weren't there before, and even John's shoe. I mentioned at the beginning of this that we tend to want to find conspiracy theories to make sense out of information that doesn't make sense. But actually, in this case, what's labeled as the conspiracy theory doesn't really seem that crazy. It's actually a lot more logical and explains things a lot easier than some of the information that's been given to us that doesn't add up. So what about all those other pieces of taillight? I want to read something from a motion filed by the defense. It says, quote, "The investigation of the crime scene, however, did not stop there. According to Detective Michael Lank's testimony before the grand jury on February 4th, 2022, 1 full week after Mr. O'Keefe's passing, Ken Berkowitz, the chief of the Canton Police Department, reportedly drove by the Fairview residence on a whim and saw, from his moving vehicle, an additional piece of red plastic that was consistent with the taillight of Miss Reed's vehicle. It's worth recalling that this was a scene that had been searched, researched, and searched again by no fewer than 3 sets of police officials. Yet, Chief Berkowitz claims that he glanced from his moving car while driving, saw a tiny shard of lens material on the ground many yards away, and, at speed, recognized the shard's evidentiary value and stopped his car to report the finding." End quote. It's worth noting here that Police Chief Berkowitz isn't just a random police chief. He has connections to the Alberts. Shocking, right? One of the officers under his command is Kevin Albert, who is Brian Albert's brother. Also, Berkowitz supported Chris Albert's campaign to run for the select board in Canton. And he's also a co-worker of Brian Higgins, who was also in the House that night. So what happened with these extra pieces of taillight? I'm going to continue reading from this document. It says, quote, Detective Lank testified that the chief of police then notified the Massachusetts State Police to report what he had discovered. Before the state troopers arrived, however, Canton police officers had already responded to the scene and taken photographs of what chief of police claimed to have found on Fairview Road on February 4th, 2022. When an incredulous grand juror specifically inquired as to why the chief of police had responded to the Fairview residence and how he discovered the evidence, Detective Lank explained, nobody called the chief. When pressed further by the juror as to why he, quote, just wandered over there, end quote, Detective Lank recounted through hearsay, he was driving down Fairview Road and he saw it, the evidence. Equally suspicious is that Brian Higgins testified that his close personal friend, the chief of police, Ken Berkowitz, called Higgins for some unknown reason in the early morning of January 29th, 2022, just before Brian Albert notified Higgins that Mr. O'Keefe had been dead in his front yard. Chief Berkowitz's repeated and convenient involvement in an investigation that is outside his jurisdiction should, at the very least, raise eyebrows, especially considering his close ties to the January 29th, 2022 occupants of 34 Fairview Road. Finally, the fact that law enforcement retrieved pieces of Ms. Reed's taillight outside the Brian Albert's house during multiple subsequent searches is particularly unsettling, given a motion-activated ring camera from Mr. O'Keefe's residence shows that the damage to Ms. Reed's vehicle actually occurred hours later at 5:07 a.m. on January 29, 2022, when she left the residence to begin her frantic search for Mr. O'Keefe, long after he was already dead. Video surveillance footage captured at 5:07 a.m. on January 29th shows Ms. Reed reverse her Lexus SUV out of Mr. O'Keefe's parking garage such that the rear right taillight of her vehicle struck Mr. O'Keefe's parked Chevy Traverse. As shown in the attached video, video surveillance clearly shows Ms. Reed's vehicle striking the Chevy Traverse at 0:18 seconds, causing the Traverse to jostle back and forth. As Ms. Reed drives out of the frame from left to right, a flash of the white taillight bulb is clearly visible through what is an obvious crack in the red taillight lens. It is undisputed that after the Lexus struck the Chevy, it never went back to the scene at Brian Albert's house. It did, however, go into police custody before the police miraculously started finding pieces of the taillight at 34 Fairview Road. End quote. This is why the taillight is so controversial. It's the only physical evidence that puts Karen at the scene, potentially hitting John and leaving the scene of the crime. It's the only evidence that they have against her, and it doesn't seem to fit logically. In the defense motion that I just read from, it clearly states that we can see in that video that I had mentioned on the last episode, we can see Karen's car, and you can see that the taillight is not shattered and missing huge pieces. If it's not shattered and missing huge pieces in that video, that means that there couldn't be these big pieces in the yard at the Albert's home. The car never went back to the Albert's home after we see it in that video. Also, the best time to do the search before there was a ton of snow on the ground and when they had daylight and when everything was able to be cleared away because they had the leaf blower with them, they didn't find any pieces of the taillight, but they did find pieces of the clear cocktail glass. Then 12 hours later, after the blizzard has come through and sunlight is gone and it's dark, then they find taillight. And then a week later, driving by, a friend of the Alberts driving by in his car just suddenly sees a piece on the side of the road. this isn't something that you would logically see when you're watching a trial or looking at documents or listening to a court hearing. This is something more from a movie where somebody's being framed. It doesn't add up. I wanted to stick mostly to the beginning of the investigation and the original reports as we're moving through this case, but periodically I think it's really important for me to jump forward just a little bit to give you some clarity on some of the situations that are happening. It's a little bit easier for me to do it that way than to go back later. This is one of those cases. We're talking about the taillight, and in a motion filed just this year, September 13th of 2023, the defense says that Trooper Proctor conducted at least five undocumented searches of 34 Fairview Road, which supposedly resulted in the recovery of taillight pieces. Those searches were not referenced or otherwise documented in any reports, memoranda, or notes produced by law enforcement to date. The only reason that the defense is even aware of these additional searches is because bags containing the taillight pieces were marked with the dates on which the pieces were found and then photographed by criminalists at the lab. The Commonwealth has not produced any documents that are responsive to this request. Those photographs, by the way, weren't even given to defense until July 25th, 2023. There's something else that I think is really important to point out right here. The police report that I mentioned, the original report, it was changed. There are two Canton Police Department incident reports, and they're almost exactly the same, and they're labeled with the same date and time as if both reports were created at that time. However, there are some differences. The original report was February 2nd, 2022. The second report was produced on October 25th of 2022 and was given to the defense. So here's the major differences. The original report that has the one single photograph of the crime scene where there's no taillight pieces shown. The second report swaps that picture and shows a photo that was taken on February 3rd of 2022, a day after the original report, by Massachusetts State Police when Trooper Proctor recovered pieces of her taillight at the scene days after they had already taken possession of the vehicle. Also, the altered report replaces Brian Albert's primary cell phone number, the same number that Jen McCabe had deleted from her cell phone belonging to Uncle Brian, with a completely different number. This is another huge situation that we're going to dive into later on. So, is the conspiracy that far-fetched? In a recent article written by Gretchen Voss for Boston Magazine, Karen's attorney, David Yannetti, says that he received a call from a tipster who had given a fake name and told him, quote, "Your client is innocent. John was beaten up by Brian Albert and his nephew. They broke his nose, and when O'Keefe didn't come to, Brian and a federal agent dumped his body on the front lawn," end quote. Although the tipster gave a fake name, he's been located now, and his attorney is denying that this is the version of events that happened. But it was enough to get the ball rolling. The defense hired an investigator who learned that Colin Albert, the nephew of Brian Albert, was also reportedly at the house that night. When Karen heard this, she immediately recalled a night in 2020 when the security alarm went off at John's, causing him to jump out of bed, run downstairs, only to find Colin, who lived nearby, and several of his friends in the yard. They exchanged words, and the next morning, Karen said that there were a dozen empty beer cans in the yard, and there was tension from then on out between Colin and John, though Karen says that's the only person that John ever had an issue with. Could something have happened that night that caused old tensions to rise again? Maybe an alcohol-fueled fight? Did something get out of hand or go too far, forcing the Alberts and McCabes to feel like they needed to protect one of their own? And was Colin really in the house? Where did this information come from, and how do we know if it's true or not? What else could they be hiding if he was in the house? This isn't the first inconsistent report that we've gotten on who was there. Next week, we're going to take the information that we've been given from the cell phone reports and filter it in with everything that we already know and see what we can prove and what we still question. My name is Brandi Churchwell with 13th Juror Podcast. We'll have all that and more next week on Conspiracy in Canton, the controversial case of Karen Reed.